you'd all take your seats so we can move on to the next item, which is our 2011 Puget Sound Crab Season Results Management and Enforcement Briefing. Rich Childers and Deputy Chief Sensi are here. So we're really interested in knowing how our predictions turned out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Rich Childers. I'm the Puget Sound Shellfish Manager in the Fish Program, and I will be presenting this cooperatively with my colleague, Deputy Chief Mike Sensi. And this report is part of the first delivery of a deliverable, if you will, from the revised Puget Sound Crab Policy, which directs the department to provide to the commission an annual report on the performance of the Puget Sound crab fishery. I've also distributed, there's four handout materials that you have in front of you, and one of them is a map of the management regions for Puget Sound for commissioners that may have not be familiar with the management regions that we discussed in depth over the last year or so. So the outline here for the presentation, I'm going to briefly go through a couple of the key elements of the revised policy, Policy 3609, which oversees the Puget Sound crab fishery, and then the performance and harvest of the 2011-12 Puget Sound commercial and recreational crab fisheries, and then some discussion on the education and outreach program that we implemented in 2011, and then some information on the crab fishery compliance and what data was collected and kind of a report card on how the fishery is doing on regulation compliance. A couple of points, key points on the policy. There's a lot more to the policy than what you see here, but just to reiterate that the policy was revised in 2010 and a revised policy was adopted on October 1st of 2010. There's measures and directives in that policy for preserving and protecting the crab resource. And the guiding principles on those conservation measures are that only male crabs will be harvested that are of 6 1/4 inches or larger, and we will not operate seasons during soft shell periods for primarily a wastage issue. It provides for both a recreational and commercial fisheries, and it maintains a base recreational season design from year to year, which is a July 1 through Labor Day, 5-day-a-week summer season, and then a winter crabbing season from October through December, which is dependent on the amount of allocation remaining on the state share in each region. So if we have a state share that has been taken fully by the summer fishery, then we will not provide recreational opportunity in the winter. Or another scenario that we did have this year, we didn't take all of the state share, but we took the majority, so we had a winter season, but it was abbreviated. So maybe 1 month or a month and a half or so. And it's 5 crab per day, daily bag limit for all seasons for the recreational fishery. The other thing that we undertook that's in the policy is to develop a cooperative education and outreach program, partnering with angler groups and so forth, and I'll go into that in more detail. So jumping right into the recreational and commercial fisheries for 2011 and 12, and the fisheries basically go until, I say 2011, 12, they start in this early summer of 2011, they end, they're pretty much wrapping up by April 1st, 2012. So some of the numbers that I'm going to present are projected numbers, particularly for the commercial fishery, but about 95% of what's going to be landed has been landed. There's just a few little areas open now with a few pounds left. So this is what I call kind of our report card on the catch record card compliance, the return rates. And I think this is important because the department has been doing a lot of work to try to get these catch cards returned for both the summer and the winter fishery. And every reporting period, we're seeing an increase. So for instance, if you look at the summer of 2007, we had 29% of the summer catch cards returned. In 2011, there was 52% of the summer cards returned. And we just had an end of a reporting period for the winter fishery, which is February 1, and we have gone from 10% return rate on the winter catch record cards to 64%. So we're getting up there where we want to be now. So we're pretty happy with that number. Also, something I'd point out on this is you see there's a big difference in the number of recreational crabbers between the summer and the winter. And this year was a year that we implemented a revision to the catch record card system where we did not make the winter cards available until August. So those that want to go crabbing in the winter had to physically go to a vendor and get a card, or they could, you know, email the department here and it would get mailed and so forth. And that was implemented primarily because of the penalty that is associated with the cards. And we were getting lots of complaints from anglers saying they did not want the winter card, but the vendors were making them take it and so forth. So we said, okay, let's physically stop that and have them go get it. So there's a very, very big difference between the number of summer versus winter recreational crabbers, 233,000 versus 28,000. This shows the number of commercial permits, which changes in terms of the number of permit holders. The commercial fishery in Puget Sound is a limited entry fishery since 1981. It was limited to 250 transferable permits. One of those permits somewhere along the line has not been renewed, and it's just been fallen away. So there's been 249 active permits for the last 15 years or so. And you can hold multiple permits, and the advantage of that is if you have multiple permits, you can have multiple pot limits. So, for instance, the number of individuals or companies owning one permit is 88, so it's 59% are single owners, and we have a total ownership of 148 individuals or companies. And I say companies in there because you can own a permit as a company and lease that permit out. And there is a company that's doing that quite extensively, and they have about 29 permits at this point, and they're leasing those out to commercial fishers. So again, of the 249 total permits, they're owned by 148 individuals or companies. This is just kind of a quick little summary of how the policy was implemented by region. And again, you have a regional map if you would like to reference that. So we did have a summer recreational fishery in all regions this year. We had a winter recreational fishery in all regions except regions 4 and 5. And the reason there was no winter fishery there is we took the entire state allocation during the summer period. There was a commercial fishery in regions 1, 2, and 3, and those three regions are the regions that the policy restricts the commercial fishery to. So basically, there was a commercial fishery in all the regions that the policy allows this year. This is kind of a surpriser. Again, the numbers for the treaty commercial fishery and the state commercial fishery are projected, although about 95% of this has been landed. There's just two areas that are open with a little bit of quota left in them. So we had a record year for fisheries in Puget Sound, and we topped 10 million pounds for the first time since I've been keeping track of this, back in the early 90s. So a very, very high abundance year in Puget Sound this year. The effort and so forth, there wasn't a lot of change there. What you're seeing is a reflection of an increase in abundance of crab. So this is an overall, this has the total state is the gray bar, and then the treaty fishery is the light blue, and then the total in the red. I'm going to show this same graph in three different slides, but it's going to get more narrow. The next one is going to be the same thing, but it's just for the state fishery, the commercial and recreational. And as you can see, the recreational fishery had a large increase in catch this year, probably driven by two things. One is the additional day that the policy had, the Sunday fishing, as well as that very high abundance that we saw in pretty much all regions. The state commercial fishery is projected to catch less than they did in 2009, but they exceeded the 2010 level. They've landed about 2,400,000 pounds at this point, and there's 200,000 more to go. So again, a little bit more to catch. They have until April 1 to finish up, but I believe this is a pretty solid prediction of what they're going to catch. And the recreational fisheries that are included, they are finished, and those are solid numbers. They ended on December 31st. This is the commercial and recreational fishery for the title of the slide says 2011. It should say 2011-12. This is by region what the recreational and commercial fishery caught. And again, no surprise, and as usual, the bulk of the commercial fishery is being landed up in the northern region, Region 1, 1.6, 1.7 million pounds. The 2 East fishery, Marine Areas 8182, or 2 East, the commercial fishery was disrupted there. They had an opening, then a close, and then a reopening. They caught less in there than what they have historically, but still approaching about a half a million pounds in that region. One thing to note on this is over the past few years, Hood Canal has been on a decline in the crab abundance, and it really bounced back this year. In fact, we've been doing a lot of discussions with the tribes on this because the initial quotas or harvest share for the state was 175,000, and the recreational fishery caught about 330,000 in the summer. So we obviously didn't provide a winter fishery, and the tribes have reopened, and we're pretty much at equity in that region with the tribes. So this is kind of another surprise. There's a couple of things going on. This shows the adjusted ex-vessel value for the commercial fishery over time since 1990, and these values are adjusted to 2011 dollars. And if you look at 2011, the dotted line shows where we predicted or projected the commercial ex-vessel value to be as a result of the policy change, down about $6.2 million. But they actually were projecting that they're going to top $10 million this year, and that's primarily driven from a very robust price per pound. It went from the last few years about $2.90 to $3 a pound on average to closer to $4 a pound this year. And again, this isn't the, we have a few hundred thousand more pounds to catch, but there's been about 2.4 million pounds landed and about 200,000 more. So this is probably pretty close to what it's going to be as a final number. So now we're going to switch to looking at enforcement and the education and outreach program in 2011. We We did form a pretty extensive partnership with between WDFW managers and enforcement, and partnered with Puget Sound Anglers, the Coastal Conservation Association, Northwest Marine Trades Association, our recreational advisory group, the Washington State University Beach Watchers Program, and the County Marine Resource Committees. So they were all part of this, and we developed a number of materials, but kind of one of our key messages that we were trying to get out there is a know before you go. And Deputy Chief Sensi might speak to this a little bit more about that user group that's out there that are just basically kind of ignorant to the laws. So we put together a couple of things that we thought were pretty darn effective, and one of them is this waterproof plastic, very durable card that we are just giving out for free at a variety of venues that can be put on the boat, and it kind of highlights the four main topics that we were trying to address, and that, you know, how to measure a crab, how to identify male and female, and reporting. And we also produced the brochure that kind of has everything you would need to know in a very clear format about Puget Sound crabbing, recreational crabbing. Again, some of the areas that we were trying to see an improvement on was there's kind of three categories, if you will, in resource conservation violations, and that is possession of undersized or female crab and rock cord violations on the pots. And then there's the resource allocation violations, which is exceeding bag limits or fail to record or report catch, and then the closed season crabbing. And Deputy Chief will probably discuss in a little more detail about the closed season crabbing. There was a lot of enforcement effort on that topic this year. The brochures that you see, we produced 120,000 of these so far. And one of the things that we did is right before the fishery opened in 2011, the recreational fishery, we pulled all the addresses from every household that had purchased a crab endorsement, either one crab endorsement or more, and we sent them one of this with a little cover letter asking them, you know, review it if you're not sure of the regulations. And we produced 70,000 of the waterproof regulation reference cards. And working with beach watchers and staff, we had a pretty extensive coverage of offload sites where we were handing out these brochures and these plastic cards, along with calipers and samples of proper rock cord and so forth. We also did quite a coverage of boat shows and sportsmen's events, radio shows and so forth before the season opened, newspapers and radio shows. In fact, my colleague Tony Florin and I spent 2 days on the road in late June going and doing personal interviews with all the major newspapers around Puget Sound. A lot of them actually carried this, these photos and this brochure in their piece prior to the opening. We did a lot of enforcement, crab fishery emphasis patrols. Deputy Chief will discuss that further. We beefed up our website link, and that's specific to Puget Sound crab, put lots more information on there, including the brochure and kind of question and answer venues. And we also continue in your package, and this is one of our biggest outreach in terms of the catch accounting, is we do a mailer to every single fisher that purchases a crab endorsement before the reporting periods, both summer and winter, and send them a reminder postcard. So you don't have to remember to report, you just have to have a correct mail address. We send a postcard, say, hey, season's closing, time to report, log online, or mail in your card. So the offload site surveys, these are not enforcement. These were more of the management staff doing this along with beach watchers. And we were looking to collect some information sort of as a non-enforcement contact, and primarily at the end of the crabbing trip. And a lot of the enforcement contacts are mid-trip on the water, so we want to catch them at the end of the day. And we conducted these between August and September. We looked at 21 high-use offload sites. So it wasn't random at all. It was just, where are we going to get the biggest volume of crabbers? And it was designed to collect CRC compliance data and some additional information. So we 535 fishers were surveyed, and 1,757 crab were checked and measured at that. And again, it was more of a outreach, you know, measuring, making sure they know how to measure, but yet we were collecting information on did they have undersized crab. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Chief Cincy.
Good morning. So we directed 32 officers to focus on the summer crab fishery in 2011. The object here was to provide a cop in the school zone strategy. So overt presence, you can see us, we're extremely visible, and the hope, of course, was that that would provide some deterrent, and also we would be available for public outreach. This emphasis, or these emphases, were mostly on the water. That's where hopefully you're going to be able to deter bad behavior before it begins. That was the idea behind that approach versus spending as much time dockside. Each week, we had open and closed days, as you all know. And as Mr. Childers pointed out, we did conduct gear sweeps to ensure that gear left out during the closed days did not become lost or derelict and add to the problem. And there was, I'll speak more about that later, but there was quite a bit of effort in that regard. Not to hit every bullet on the slide, but you know, we contacted over 2,000 fishers. So the compliance snapshot that you see here is from those directed patrols, and please understand that we had other non-directed patrols that resulted in crab enforcement and outcomes that aren't necessarily represented here. As I mentioned, over 2,000 crab fishers were contacted to get these particular stats. And you can see a comparison between last season and the season before, indicating some, although small, compliance improvement, which we think is a good thing. Mr. Childers spoke to the offload site survey work that he and staff had done. Mr. Childers and I stayed in contact throughout the season as we monitored the results of our patrols. And one thing that became apparent was that enforcement's approach on the water may demonstrate lower compliance than what's actually there. In other words, people that didn't necessarily record their catch on the water but may record that catch later at the ramp were pulled into that noncompliance factor. And so you can see that there's at least a 2%. There's working on a cold, and I'm having trouble focusing here. You can see a 3% change in catch record card fail to record type violations between what we saw on the water and what we saw at the ramps, so indicating that some proportion of the violators on the water may not be violators by the time they reach the actual ramp.
Commissioner Jennings has a question.
I had an opportunity to do enforcement patrols on crab a couple years back, and one of the violations we saw was the soft-shelled crabs. And I'm seeing you're not listing any here. Did you encounter many of those types of violations this time?
We did encounter some violations. I can't tell you what the compliance factor was with that particular rule, but I can get that information for you.
Thanks.
Commissioner Dubia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. As I look at what we have for, it's not probably all of the citations, but the ones that concern me are those that impact the resource. And it's nice to see that only 21% of violations that we're recording are really don't impact the resource. It's a process. And having done this a couple of times, it's often difficult to that process of pulling in these spots and putting them in your boat and counting them and writing them down as you're bouncing around in the boat. Is our process, if we come up and check a person as they bring it in their catch, is it a functional problem that they're going to do it, but they're just right now it's automatically a citation, and if there's a crab in the boat and you're not have it written down, are we creating part of the problem ourselves by the way we have it written?
Thank you, Commissioner Dubia. I think we have to have our rules structured the way it is because I can't follow people around. We've also demonstrated, it's been demonstrated through some internal studies as well, that the longer you wait to account for your catch, the less likely then that you ever will. We do give a lot of warnings for this particular offense. I think the standard is a reasonable one. Mr. Childers has done a lot of work with respect to how the catch record card itself is designed so that people understand their obligation. You pull in a crab pot, you find two legal crab in that first crab pot in a string of two or whatever, you record that catch before you pull your next pot. That's not unreasonable. And Puget Sound does have some rough weather days. Being from the coast, I'm a bit biased. So I'll say, with that in mind, it ain't that bad. I would also like to point out that these are these percentages represent the percentage of people not in compliance. That's not a percentage. So the CRC violation percentage rate that you see here is not the a percentage of catch record cards as it relates to overall violations. Before I move on, I think a lot of people were educated this year, and I don't think you can measure our success by one season. I would caution folks to exercise a bit of patience. I myself patrolled opening day. I was surprised and impressed and glad to see that many people I personally contacted on the water had the outreach material that the fish program worked so hard to put together, and our very important partners in the recreational community helped so hard to distribute. There was a lot of activity on our busiest ramps like 10th Street at Everett, I just saw a lot more awareness. I would have expected the numbers to be somewhat better. The possession of undersized crab, you see that there's an offload site survey number that's better than what we saw in the water. Is that a representation of better compliance, or were they able to detect the number of undersized crab during a sample versus in a law enforcement inspection? So there's a lot of variables here that, you know, you have to sort of balance and you can nitpick probably, not that anybody's doing that, but you can nitpick how we gather data, what our analysis is at the end of the day, probably with each one of these regulations, but from what we saw, there's an improvement, and I think it'll continue.
Commissioner Mencken?
Yeah, thank you. I think this is a very, very good presentation. I'd like to nitpick a little bit, if you allow me to. Last summer, during the recreational crab fishery, we heard from some of the newspapers who had interviewed some of the enforcement officers, and I thought that came across very, very unfairly, not necessarily because of the enforcement officers, because they were answering honestly. But my question is, this data is probably a little more fair, but I'm wondering how it reflects the entire system, whether this is really a scientific, statistically valid comparison for these variables. Are we seeing here something like you say, Mike, for example, that you can nitpick this and you can see differences, for example, the 8% and the 4% on the possession of undersized crab? How fair is this, in terms of an overall statistically valid survey?
Thank you, Commissioner. I might ask Mr. Childers to help me out a little bit after I take a shot at this. First of all, I think the newspaper article that you were referring to didn't accurately represent or took out of context the information the officer was trying to provide. I think the newspaper reflected a very high noncompliance based on what the officer said his observations were. The officer was trying to communicate was, on any given day, you could have, these weren't his exact words, but you can have very high compliance, 90%, 100%, whatever, and on another given day, you can have 80% non-compliance. You know, he was trying to represent that it can be all over the map, and so that's why we look at the average. And when you speak to how scientific is this approach, my answer is not very. You could also argue that compliance is much better than what we're able to represent on the water because, let's face it, we try to be random. We're not very good at it. If an individual is there with a cluster of vessels, and not to give up our secrets, but if he decides to leave first upon our approach, he just invited an inspection likely. Why is he leaving? It's early in the day, people are still pulling their gear, and yet he doesn't want to be there anymore. So he's either done, and we'd like to, you know, check his entire catch, or he's got a problem he doesn't want us to see. So it's very difficult for us to be non-selective when we go fishing, as much as we try.
Yeah, I would add to that, and I did mention that because these are not random samples, either enforcement or the offload site, I don't think we can put any kind of statistical parameters around them. We have thought about in the future trying to look at a pool of offload sites and actually do a random selection of site as well as time to add some randomness to it so there would be more statistically valid. But at this point, we're kind of maximizing contacts, if you will. So there's no random selection in here. So therefore, it's not a truly statistical measure.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you. Good presentation.
We're not done yet with
no,
the presentation.
Huh?
We're not done with the presentation.
Thus far. A couple comments. In my particular business, I have a lot of dealings with sport, commercial, and tribal, both fishermen and crabbers, so I'm pretty in tune with some of their feelings. The one thing I wanted to, the gentleman right in the back, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, that tested a commercial crabber that talked about the soft shell issue up in the North Sound this last year. That was not a small issue. That was a very, very significant issue. I had a lot of comments from tribal folks and non-tribal folks about that fishery, and I just, for the life of me, can't understand why there'd be a commercial fishery by anyone, or a recreational fishery for that matter, that would in fact take soft-shell crab. It's a waste of the resource, and I hope we can figure out a way to deal with that better. As it relates to the compliance issue in the recreational fishery, there's a lot of things going on. One of the things that's going on is at the Seattle Boat Show that's going on right now through Sunday. It's going to be 10 days. There's been seminars, 10 or 11 seminars done on this issue, on how to crab and how to crab respectfully and with compliance. And the thing, you got to bring your own chair to find a seat. So the people are wanting the information to be better. I can connect this with my involvement for 30-some years with what we have with the selective salmon fishing. What's happened with the selective salmon fishing is, on the recreational side, they have become much better stewards of the resource because they want to protect their opportunity to be fishing and on the water. And that's the same thing that's happening with the crab. And I think you guys are doing a great job. I think we need to continue to educate and ticket when we need to and make these people continue to improve their stewardship.
Thank you, sir.
So, not much longer, Madam Chair. You see, go ahead to the next slide, please. You see here that we conducted 42 patrols directed at closed day fishing. We seized almost 800 crab pots. That we can attribute to the recreational fishery. We noticed that compliance could be better with respect to marking buoys and identifying that gear. We understand that work is critical because if we don't do it, then a number of these crab pots become lost, derelict, and particularly if they're not in compliance with escape mechanism rules, then they cause further harm to the resource. You can see for yourself the compliance estimates here. I just want to make sure that a couple of points are clear. Understand with respect to the tribal gear we inspected, this gear was lost or abandoned, and we knew that given the buoy and line condition. We could have conducted a larger sample, but it wasn't our object this year to necessarily target treaty gear. But, you know, given the lost errant pots that we retrieved, this is possibly reflective of a larger problem, and we have discussed that with tribal law enforcement and tribal policy folks. You can see that the state commercial gear that we inspected was compliant. Understand that we're picking this gear up as we're working the wreck fishery, so that's what it's focused on. The Canadian piece, this involves gear fishing illegally in the U.S. anyway, so please don't think that my crew ventured into Canadian waters and began inspecting that nation's fishers. We didn't do that. So I wanted to talk to you a bit about some of the other violations that we discovered in the crab world during the rec season, while we're on the water, while we're providing this additional focus and also time periods surrounding our open seasons. We had, and not all the case numbers are in yet. There have been other examples since I put this together, but with respect to gear and crab theft, we had identified three tribal violations, made three cases for theft. We also had investigated one non-tribal individual for exceeding crab pot limits. search warrant was served and the vessel was seized in that case. We had several instances involving failure to account for catch. Two cases involving non-Indian fish dealers, eight tribal members, and two retail markets. This is an area that that really concerned us. We focused a lot of time in. Obviously, catch accounting is important in both the recreational and commercial sector. These failure to account for catch cases involving non-Indian dealers and tribal fishers were quite significant. We did make one arrest for possession of crab without proper documentation. That was a non-tribal case. We did make four arrests for fishing in a closed area. All four were non-tribal. And then with respect to possession or the sale of undersized Dungeness crab, officers made 11 tribal cases and seven non-tribal cases. On the non-tribal side, that involved non-Indian retailers that were purchasing undersized tribal product. So we invested, this is just a snapshot, we invested about 3,400 hours enforcing buying and receiving regulations with respect to crab and providing presence on the water and checking commercial catch. Cases were developed, you know, unilaterally and also in concert with at least five separate tribes. Most of the case referrals had unsatisfactory outcomes, with one exception or a couple of exceptions, but one notable exception involving the Puyallup tribe. We had a catch accounting case involving some of their membership in collusion with non-Indian dealers, and the tribe, for lack of a better way of putting it, really put the smack down with respect to their fishers' involvement. These patrols are resource intensive. They require a lot of personnel to pull off, but we have quite a few incursions of Canadian fishers fishing in U.S. waters. Our zero tolerance position that we've held for many years is not unknown to the Canadian fishers. They know what kind of risks they're taking. So they lose gear and they lose vessels. In one particular case this year, the same individual lost his vessel twice. It's our policy to allow commercial fishermen, if they don't have a bad history, to settle with the department on the vessel. And we did that with a vessel seized for fishing in U.S. waters, and the same fellow and the same boat were used once again, and actually the U.S. Border Patrol caught him the second time and notified us in the middle of the night, and we took care of business. Many of this poaching is done often by use of long line. That is, they will connect a number of crab pots to a common line, a ground line. There are no surface buoys, or there's only one surface buoy, or the buoy isn't a buoy at all. It's actually just a stick attached to a line, which is attached to a series of crab pots. And the fellow that lost his boat twice, that's how he was fishing. So Border Patrol came alongside, saw these guys pulling up this ground line, knew that there was a problem given all the interaction they have with us, and the bad guys cut the ground line and tried to run, and they were caught. So this is how we categorize the compliance world. The last one seems to be the largest proportion of noncompliance. That's what we see, and that's where education and outreach really matters. As you know, as you heard described today, we've made a heavy investment in education and outreach. And we've done that in collaboration with some really dedicated sports groups. And they really do have to be commended for stepping up. They did a lot of work last year. And I really think it's working. We need a reasonable amount of time to measure it, though. Trust me, I don't want to come back here in the future and say we were wrong. The opportunistic guy, that's the guy that we can often deter with an officer on, out on the ground, the cop in the school zone, the example I gave you. And the PSCE account will buy 2 to 3 officers, plus has a limited overtime pool, so we can focus more attention in this area. I thank Commissioner Schmidt and the other commissioners that supported, and the FISH program that supported, our ability to find, to take a funding source and direct it to more boots on the ground for this activity. So I think we can turn that around, too. The hardcore, that's obviously the toughest bunch to catch, and our goal is to achieve progress in outreach and education so we can focus more on this kind of person. Our distraction with those that simply make mistakes, that allows for the hardcore to fly under the radar. Mr. Childers and I are pushing very hard for a multi-jurisdictional approach to tribal and non-tribal fisheries that I think will help deal with that particular individual. I just thought I'd explain the photo a little bit. So Officer Bouchain in North Sound introduced herself to a man, this particular gentleman, who was surprised to learn that the season for crab was closed. And, Officer Bouchain, his view was that since it was summertime, the season must be open. And, of course, we haven't regulated that way in a long time. Officer Bouchain escorted this apparently confused man back to the dock, and they had a little chat about his activities. And the other officer, Officer Gaston, he introduced himself and explained that to the fisherman that his use of mooring buoys, as you see here on the dock, was quite sneaky, it wasn't a very good disguise after all. The man had an explanation for that. He said that when he went to Fisherman Supply or Fishery Supply in Seattle to buy crab buoys, they were sold out. So he was forced to use those mooring buoys as a desperate alternative. And Officer Gaston then explained that this store is probably the largest supplier of crab gear anywhere, and expressed disbelief that there weren't any red and white buoys. So the officer called the store, and they confirmed that at the time this individual purchased those mooring buoys, they had 215 red and white buoys in stock. So far, things weren't adding up. After they removed the gear from the violator's boat, the officers found 38 crab on board. That discovery was a little harder to explain than the mooring buoy piece. And not only was he over limit by 33 crab, had the season actually been open in the first place, he also illegally possessed both female and undersized crab. So, of course, he was issued numerous citations. So that concludes my piece of the presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. In terms of the whole crab fishery, between the three user groups, are the violations that impact the resource spread equally across, or between the tribes and the commercials and the rec, or is this something we need to educate on all of them, or is there one group that's impacting a resource more than others?
Do I really have to answer that one? We don't collect violation information for all sectors equally. And then, you know, tribal governments, you know, self-regulate, and so that's not a real transparent program from where I sit, so it's difficult for me to understand fully what's going on there. I know what we detect, and so based on just on what I see, not statistics, all sectors have problems. And all sectors have violators that commit violations that do impact the resource. You know, it's just really tough to measure what each group's contribution to the problem is. I can't give you numbers.
Rich, did you want to? Answer. You look like you wanted to say something.
No, not on that question.
Okay. Very true. Okay, Commissioner Dubia?
Yeah, I have a separate question on that. This is a limited entry licensing process. Is that correct? I was kind of surprised to find that we have one owner who has 29 licenses, if I heard correctly.
That's correct.
How would it... I guess I find it very hard if this is a pretty attractive license and how one person was able to be the chosen one 29 times.
Well, it's a limited entry fishery, so the licenses are transferable, meaning they're sold. So there's brokers out there that have licenses for sale, and an individual, I believe if you have a history of violations in fisheries, you may not be able to purchase. I think there's something in RCWs to that effect. But an individual can buy a permit or two permits or continue to accumulate permits over time and lease those permits out and get alternate operators. We charge a fee. They have to register an alternate operator in the licensing department. So, yes, there is a company in North Puget Sound that owns 29 permits. They're leasing those permits to fishers, and they buy all the crab, is my understanding, that are landed by those 29 permits. And this is a concern to the commercial industry also. There's been a lot of discussions about revisiting the legislation on that to try to, because in theory, you could end up with one company owning all permits, and they don't want to see that happen.
Yeah, I would encourage to check this out further. This doesn't seem what our intent is in terms of providing a limited opportunity and having it end up in very few hands.
Yes, and it's a recent occurrence. Until just a few years, the most you would see ownership would be three permits usually, and then maybe four on occasion. But just in the last few years, this trend of a company owning permits is occurring.
And are these owners citizens? Are they corporations? Or what are...
They're citizens. The company in question, it's Starfish Company, and they're connected to the Canadian Chinese market. So my understanding is the crab they are purchasing is going to Vancouver to family members there and then off to China to complete the whole transaction process.
So 29 of our 142 owners, they're shipping all their stuff out of state?
Well, 29 of the 249 permits are owned by one individual company.
And along that same line, have we have any results when we changed this crab for the commercial people? Was there a significant change in allocation between the smaller crabbers and the larger boats or catch people, or did it stay?
Yeah, we have, because the season is just wrapping up, we have a couple more weeks. We haven't looked at the breakdown like that in terms of individual landings per fisher and so forth, but I can probably in the next couple of weeks probably summarize that and provide it to the commissioners by email.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Jennings?
Are you finished with the presentation? Or the summary?
Yeah, I think that we can, you know, there's a summary of, you know, what we've gone through, but I think we can open it up for questions at this point.
Do you have a question?
A couple of questions and first a comment. You know, looking at both the educational piece of paper and the pamphlet, neither one talk about how to identify soft-shelled crabs. And I just say that because I've raised it as an issue before. That's what I saw when I went out on the enforcement patrol, that people didn't really know how to tell them. Well, we talked about maybe adding that to one or two of these, and I was expecting maybe to see it in the pamphlet because there's more room, but you say look for them, but there's no way to identify what that is. So that's just sort of maybe we can do it better in the future if that's appropriate. I did want to talk a little bit about two points. One is get your reaction to the discussion during the public comment about starting our season later so that we're not really, so we're managing the entire harvest of the crab to deal with the soft shell, hard shell season, the tribal component as well as commercial and recreational. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, during the 2010 policy review process, we presented a number of options for recreational season designs, and they basically were all based on a July 1 opening, and that date comes from years and years of extensive soft shell sampling that has occurred throughout. And to this day, I still view that as a pretty conservative date. And in fact, if you look at the history of what's been happening, let's say the last 6 years or so, the recreational fishery opens in July. The treaty late spring, early summer fisheries are being implemented late May, early June, ahead of the recreational fishery. And those are also based on shell condition testing. There's pretty extended distance to go and do a check before the fishery opens, and we have a threshold of 80%, has to be 80% hard shell. So that July 1 opening, in my opinion, is still a very conservative date to where you're beyond the major molt period. Now, one thing that we do see in this, I thought it was maybe this kind of my imagination at first, but we see it year after year, is oftentimes when the recreational fishery opens, particularly in confined areas like Port Susan, Port Townsend Bay, we won't get any reports of soft-shell crab problems until a couple of weeks into the fishery. And then we start getting them. And I think what's happening, my theory is that, well, there's a lot of effort out there, there's a lot of fishing, and there's a lot of crab that are hard that are being removed, and soft ones are being returned. So the percentage of soft shell, we think, as the fishery proceeds in that early July for a couple of weeks, actually increases because such a high percentage of the hard legal-sized males are being removed. No true data of that, but we've been noticing this year after year that these calls start coming in second or third week of July, not the first week. So that could be an artifact of just a lot of hard crab being removed. We continue to monitor the shell condition. There's still going to be testing going on. We do see some shifting around a little bit, but I'm still thinking that, advocating that July 1 is a conservative date for an opening.
And then for the recreational. Last question. When we were looking at revising the crab regulations, I stated concerns that going to 5 crabs per day with that increased season may well result in a more recreational take than we had anticipated. It looked like we got a lot of recreational harvest happening in the summer to the point where we couldn't even open a couple of our areas for winter. When would it be appropriate to look at that daily limit of 5 versus 4, and do you think we need to look at that yet?
Well, I think what we saw this year, that 10 million pound year, I don't think we can expect to maintain that. I think we're riding a really high wave of high abundance. I think we need to probably give this a couple of years, similar to the enforcement, and kind of see when we get more of a normal abundance year what that take of the recreational fishery is going to be. Because for this 2011 fishery for the recreational was an all-time record high, and from management perspective, that is primarily fueled that we had this all-time record high abundance, and it was just the word was out there that, you know, 2-3 limits per pot, no problem in some of these areas. So it really kind of fed on itself, we think. So I would say let's let this run a couple of years would be a recommendation, and if we get more of a normal year of 8 million pounds or so, then be able to look to see what the recreational commercial percentages come out to be.
Commissioner Schmitten is next.
Thank you, Chair. Excuse me. Both for Rich and Deputy Chief, excellent presentation. Recall we ask each year that we get this because we want to very carefully track the catches. I have three items. I want to focus on the new policy as it really serves as the guidelines for Puget Sound Dungeness crab management. And then the first is some positives, strong positives, the educational and outreach piece, the joint effort by both the state and the organized recreational groups have met or exceeded my expectations, and they continue, and that is a real plus. Enforcement, another very good effort. You can see, though, we have a ways to go, but I think the two of those are linked. The more you inform and educate people, the lower your enforcement arrest or violations will be. And then reporting, I think that's equally, if not maybe even, maybe not more important, but increases in reporting actually increase the accuracy of the data, and that has been questioned in the past, and I think it's really relevant that they're coming, you're getting an improvement. Second issue is on conservation, and this field's been plowed a little bit. Mr. Cruz, in testimony, raised two important things that I wanted to make sure we had a discussion about. One, there apparently was a missing 220,000 crab. Perhaps that's the end total, but I want you to address that for us. I won't spend much time on soft shell. I focus on that, too. I wondered if we have joint testing, and apparently we do. Is there agreement when the season opens through that joint testing? Do we change the date because of the being below the 80%? The third issue, and I'll just put them all on the table and then you can talk about them, it's potentially an equity issue in the recreational community. It appears the way we've established this system that the last in line to open, in that case would be, what, Area 6, gets what's left over. And that may, you know, may work. Apparently this year they were closed early. That may be something we'll want to look at in the future. If that's going to be traditionally they're not getting a equitable season out of this, that may be a problem area. So back, 220,000 missing. I think you've explained the soft shell and then potential equity issue.
Yeah, Commissioner Smitten, this is the first year that we implemented the no telephone survey program for the anglers who fail to return their card. What we have been doing is collecting information since 2007 as a comparison between the catch record cards that are returned and the average catch rate per angler and so forth versus the telephone survey. So we have 4 years of data that we've collected now, that so we felt confident that we could now generate recreational catch estimates based on catch record cards that are returned that, you know, now we're above 50%, and expanding that data out to the group that failed to return. So no telephone survey. So our statisticians and catch card database people have been working closely with the Northwest Indian Fishery Commission, biometricians, and so forth. So there's kind of a statistical group, if you will, that have been working on how the best to proceed to do this. Well, we generated the initial estimates for the summer season in early October. And the group continued to look at the data set and so forth, and they determined, and I concurred, that after further analysis of that, that the approach that we were using, the regression line, there was an error in it, so to speak, right? So basically, through this collaborative effort, they said, no, rather than generating the catch this way, they decided to go rather than option A. Option B is a more statistically valid, and we agreed. So those catch numbers were revised. There wasn't an overage or anything. It was just basically the initial catch numbers came out for the summer season. The statisticians and biometricians looked at this closer and said, no, we think this is a more robust way to approach this, so we revised those numbers. Some areas went up, some areas went down in their catch, but there was a 200,000-pound increase overall throughout all the Puget Sound marine areas. The bulk of that was Hood Canal, so it was a non-commercial area.
Commissioner Mahan?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One has to do with what we have remaining as a standing stock out there after this record fishery. It was noted in the testimony coming from one of the commercial crabbers this morning. There were a couple of things I thought that you mentioned that were revealing. One, that we had a bounce back on the Hood Canal fishery. I'm assuming that we did have test fishery information. Did that test fishery information predict accurately that we were going to have a bounce back in that fishery? And related to that, do we have information on hand now that would indicate what is remaining out there in terms of the standing stock from test fisheries?
Yes, Commissioner Mahan, the preseason test fishery that we did in Hood Canal did throw up the flag, and we met with the tribe and said, you know, this is off. We got some of the highest catch rates ever in some of the index stations. So we knew going into it that the initial harvest target for state and tribes was too low. We will start implementing preseason tests in probably April around Puget Sound, and that's where we really get the indication. It's not so much what's left, because if you go out right now and you will see there's very few legal size male crab left in the system, but there's a lot of sublegal crab, 4.5, 5-inch crab. I mean, some areas you might get 20 or 30 per pot. By the summer, those are going to be next year's crab. That's next year's cohort. So we have that massive spring molt that occurs, and then that new cohort moves in. So we see that every year. Right now, if you went out and did a test fishery, you might get one legal crab per pot in a lot of these areas. By July, that could go up to 5, 6, 8, or 10 legals per pot.
Yeah, thank you. I have one more question for you. During our initial testimony, prior to the change in the policy, we had several of the commercial crabbers say to us that if you take too much crab away from us, it reduces the availability of those crabs to the general public. I disagreed with that because I feel that we have a free enterprise system, and when these crabs enter commercial channels, they're out of the hands of the actual fishermen in most cases. I guess my question here is, what is now happening with these crabs that are presently going to apparently the Chinese market? What percentage of the catch this last year do we know? What percentage of the catch this last year actually went through those channels into Canada?
Yeah, and Commissioner Mankin, you realize we, as a department, we don't collect that information. We did look into that in 2010 during the policy review, and I think we estimated somewhere in the 80-90% range was going overseas, or at least outside the state. We have not looked at that for 2011. I can do some follow-up work on that to try to get some. I think it's going to be an estimate. Because unfortunately, a single clearinghouse that actually collects that detailed information, I'm not aware of one. You might be, but we've been trying to get a handle on that by working with the individual buyers to see what percent they export and so forth. So perhaps after this season ends, in the next few weeks, we could kind of look at that and then try to pull that information together.
Thank you.
Yep.
Commissioner Caney?
I would like to go back because I missed one of the questions from Commissioner Schmidt about the soft shell testing. We will be, and we do this collaboratively with the tribe, starting in April, May, doing soft shell testing and all the way up until right before their fisheries open. The recreational season, as I stated, is a set what we consider to be a very conservative season that's out there, and that's why we feel comfortable putting that date in the pamphlet and so forth. I do not anticipate, and it hasn't happened in recent years, that we would run into a situation where there would be such a high percentage of soft crab in a test that we would have to override the sport pamphlet with an emergency regulation. But that is not something that we can say would never happen, but it would have to be kind of a disaster. We'd have to go out and see probably 50-60% soft shell crab in an area for that to happen. Our threshold is for the treaty fishery to open commercially is 80%, and that's usually what we're seeing in late May, early June. They've already achieved that 80%. So if we did a test and we saw, boy, there's 50-60% soft crab, we would probably do a news release and probably delay the recreational fishery. But I don't see that happening. At least if it happened, it'd be very rare.
Commissioner Caney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious as to that. We heard from the public testimony from the commercial side that the way it was cost some commercial fishermen thousands of dollars, many thousands of dollars. And as I understand it, there was a change made to the 5 days per week for recreational fisheries. And I don't understand enough about this to know, was there some change that kept commercial fisheries different or as is? But my question is, allowing this to go on as it is now for another couple of years, and with good harvestable numbers of crab, is it a fair proration, I guess, between recreation and commercial? If continued numbers of very harvestable numbers of crab are available, and we set into process a season that might appear to favor recreational, or at least their numbers came way up in this last year. And I guess I'd just like you to address that.
Yeah, the primary or significant change that was adopted in the new policy is it went from a four-day-a-week recreational fishery in the summer to a five-day, and that fifth day included a weekend day. So it used to end prior to the policy revision, it was a Wednesday through Saturday. It was shifted to Friday through Monday. Thursday through Monday. So that full weekend is providing more opportunity during a very popular time. So the predicted recreational catch, it was predicted to increase, and it did, obviously. How much of that is attributed to the high abundance versus the extra day? I can't answer that. The commercial fishery, as it was mentioned, they are last in line. They start in October. And I don't, and again, you saw on the slide that the commercial fishery will exceed the 2009 catch. So that's something that we did not predict. We predicted quite a substantial decrease in their catch. So I think this year has been such an anomaly with the abundance that I don't know exactly what we can read into it, because it's not a normal year. The recreational fishery, record high catch. Commercial fishery exceeded last year's catch.
Okay, thank you very much. Excellent presentation. Go forth and do good.
We will.
Keep them on their toes. Go after the bad guys.